You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're very pleased to have a chance to catch up on the streets of New York with Russ Dallin, one of our go-to guys on what's happening in Latin America, a subject with which he is intimately familiar, both by virtue of his longtime residence in the region, but also his role as the president and editor-in-chief of the Latin American Herald Tribune. Russ is also the head of an international investment bank, Caracas Capital Markets, and has been extraordinarily helpful to us in making sense of what is going on, particularly in one of the countries in the region that is most desperately in need of attention. He gives it to us. We're grateful. Russ, thank you for joining us to talk, among other things, about the latest out of Venezuela.
Thank you, Secretary Gaffney. It's always a learning pleasure to be with you.
Well, we're learning mostly from you. Let me ask you, Russ, there has been, as you know so well, nothing but bad news out of the Venezuelan economy. There is, at the moment, pending a very substantial debt payment due. What's the latest reading on whether the Venezuelan government is going to find yet another rabbit to pull out of the hat for the purposes of making that payment?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Frank. That's where all eyes in both the capital markets here in New York are all focused on, because Venezuela has a total debt stock, along with PDVSA, its state-owned oil company, of $70 billion. Outstanding dollar bond debt. They have more than that in other debt, but in terms of dollar bond debt that has to be paid on a semiannual coupon basis in dollars, that is what we're talking about. $3.6 billion of that comes due because of interest payments and some maturities this month and next month. So October-November liabilities for Venezuela, they had to pay $3.6 billion. So far, they have paid only $41 million of that money. They're behind on $600 million over 18 days, behind and not paying so far. And today they have a make-or-break date. The 18 days falls within a 30-day grace period. I hate to use the word grace when I talk about the narco-trafficking regime, communist regime of Venezuela, but in legal terms, so that's what it is. They have 30 days to make those payments good if they don't make it on the due date. But there is a payment of $984 million today due that there is no grace period. It must be done today.
I understand that Reuters is reporting that they expect that there will be a payment made today. Where is the money coming from? Given what's happening to PDVSA, which is the principal revenue generator for the government of Venezuela, Russ Dallin, it seems to strain credulity that they'll be able to come up with that money.
Well, they haven't been paying anything else. They haven't been providing dollars to the market. They're not even buying food for their people. Basically, if they collect for 3 months the amount of oil sales that they get of a million barrels a day, predominantly going to the United States, gives them $45 million a day. That's $1.35 billion a month. And they've been doing it since the start of September, October, and November. So you're almost talking $4 billion there that they can raise by not paying anything else, which they're doing means starving their population to make sure that they pay these payments. And it is a make or break.
Does that mean salaries for PDVSA employees and all the rest as well, or are they managing to eke out some sort of payments?
Yeah, here's the trick. They pay those salaries in monopoly money, so they don't pay them dollars. And there's no fixed rate of the bolivar to the dollar. Well, the government says there's a fixed rate of 10 bolivars to the dollar. But the black market, because they just keep running the printing presses, says the rate is now 42,000 bolivars to the dollar. So in other words, if you can get the government to give you a dollar for 10 Bs, you can turn around and sell that for 42,000 Bs, make a 4,200% profit.
So Russ Dallin, what this again portends, if not today, literally, or in the next month, is just a further inexorable slide into bankruptcy. And what happens as a practical matter should the government of Venezuela essentially go, at least economically, belly up?
Well, it's a great question. And actually, yesterday I was in Washington addressing a Council of the Americas event, and actually there was a call from some of the participants to break when I told them that Venezuela made a fault today, then was tomorrow, and that $70 billion worth of debt stock may be in their mutual funds, because a lot of mutual fund managers buy a little piece of it to spice up the yield a little bit.
People wanted to go check on their holdings.
Call their brokers. Yes, people wanted to go and call their brokers. But aside from it being widespread in people's 401k mutual funds that they may not even have a reckoning of, it's mainly held by hedge funds who are willing to take those kind of risks now. It has filtered down. There are a lot of mom and pops that have held it. And indeed, when Argentina went belly up a decade and a half ago and defaulted on its debt, you know, there were dentists in Peoria and dry cleaners in Italy who, you know, were all hit because they had invested in those things.
As I recall, Paul Singer didn't take it well, though.
And Paul Singer helped develop some of the law that will be used against Venezuela in terms of forcing them to honor some of those bonds, because they don't have what we call collective action clause, so that they will have to pay off those bonds 100% on the dollar, some of that debt, even if they do default.
Hey, Russ, before we run out of time, I did want to ask you about one other issue, and that is the sort of aftermath of this fraudulent election that had happened shortly before our last talk. Governors across the country were elected, almost all of them. It seems the beneficiaries of you know, voter fraud and other hijinks. There were five who were selected or elected or allowed to be elected, or the government couldn't steal the election from, who were, I guess, associated with the opposition. Give us the latest on their fate.
So it's a great question, and let me just be clear. Actually, there was a sixth governor who should have won. And we actually found the evidence of the fraud. They weren't able to cheat enough in the election that they needed an extra 2,000 votes to help their guy win by 1,480 votes. So they actually changed the totals because you get a tally at the end of the day printed out from the computer in each voting center. But the CNE numbers that they reported differ by 2,300 votes, and the guy only won by 1,400 votes. So it was quite clear that they were fraudulent there. And the other elections, they actually had 1.6 million people voted without their fingerprints. So as we used to say here in the States, vote early, vote often. And that's essentially what happened, because that more than made up for the difference. When a government that has 20% support wins 80% of the elections, you know there's been fraud. On these governors, four of them decided, the Acción Democrática, one of the two old parties of Venezuela, decided to be sworn in before this fraudulent constituent assembly, which the U.S. and almost every other country, aside from Russia and China, have agreed is a fraudulent body. The other governor, who was a member of First Justice Party, he did not. His state legislator, which is controlled by the government, Chavistas, declared him absent, and he was removed as governor-elect, was never able to sign in, and they're having a new election. So even if you win an election in Venezuela, they don't let you win.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the case that you will actually govern. What a tragedy. Russ Dallin, I keep hoping that one of these conversations with you about Venezuela, given its strategic importance in the region and its immense oil wealth and the privation that the people there are experiencing, that there'll be some good news, but it seems as though there's very little of that to be reported. We appreciate you nonetheless coming aboard to share with us your insights, and we'll look forward to talking with you again. Next up, we'll be speaking with Congressman Brian Babin of Texas right after this.